Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, in just about 2 weeks, vote-by-mail ballots will be sent out around the state, and the race is on to get some of Florida's most dependable voters, people over 60 years old. Now, the campaigns of both President Trump and former Vice President Biden are spending millions targeting the senior vote here in Florida.
Our seniors that are being hit the hardest, they're frightened. And I want them to know that their health and safety will be my responsibility if I'm your president.
President Trump is protecting Social Security and Medicare, lowering costs, expanding access, keeping his word.
Coming up this hour, how are the candidates going after older voters here in the Sunshine State? President Trump won that senior vote 4 years ago, but new polling finds it a much closer race this year among older voters. So we want to hear from those seniors. What candidate has your support and why? Is it Medicare, prescription drug prices, the pandemic? What are the issues that will decide your vote here in the 2020 election? 305-995-1800. Your phone call's coming up in a few moments. Get them in now. 305-995-1800. You can also send us your thoughts on Twitter. We're at Florida Roundup.
But first, Hurricane Sally. 4 months worth of rain fell in just 4 hours in Pensacola Wednesday as Sally hit the far western portion of Florida. It was a Category 2 storm. Hundreds had to be rescued from storm surge and floodwaters there. Tens of thousands remain without power in the panhandle as more rain threatens the area this weekend. Tom Ninestein is managing editor with Florida Public Radio member station WUWF in Pensacola. Hi, Tom. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So what's the latest there over in your neck of the woods in terms of damage and cleanup? What are you seeing?
Well, we just had an update from the Escambia County Emergency Management folks, and they said that about half the people who lost power from Hurricane Sally have now had it restored. They hope that everyone who can receive power will have it by Tuesday. So that'll be less than a week after the storm came ashore that power will be restored. That has a rippling effect throughout the community, not only closing businesses, but also gas stations. And we were updated that it's not a supply of gasoline that's the issue. It's that gas stations don't have the power to have the pumps operate. So people are getting a little running out of patience. They're getting a little cabin fever. The mantra is now, and if you don't have to be out of your house, stay home.
Good advice. How serious is the flooding situation there?
The water's starting to recede, so that now they'll be able to do an assessment of what the damage has been. We got an update on Pensacola Beach. Anybody who's been to Northwest Florida knows how beautiful those white beaches are, but an estimated 500,000 cubic feet of sand was taken away as the storm pounded the coast.
My goodness. And parts of the Pensacola Bay Bridge actually fell into the ocean, too. Is that right? What happened with that?
Yeah. A section of it was struck by a construction barge. The bridge is being rebuilt because of its age, and one of the construction barges nearby slammed into it, knocking out a section. At first estimate, it could be 4 to 6 weeks before that's repaired. Anybody who's been to this part of the state understands that that's a major bridge between Pensacola and Gulf Breeze.
Right. Now, folks,
about 50,000 cars use it every day.
Right. Heavily traveled. What about people in shelters in your area? This part of Florida has just been walloped several times in a row now, and people have been made homeless. They're living in cars or living in shelters. What's the effort to help people that have been displaced?
Right now, there are fewer than 300 people in the two shelters, including the Pensacola Bay Center. Now we're setting up points of distribution to help people with ice, with water. There don't seem to be a real demand for tarps, but the county is swinging into action to help those folks.
Good news, and certainly utility crews from around the state are headed your way to help restore power. What's the easiest way others listening right now can help the panhandle in the wake of Sally?
I think contacting The Red Cross is a good way. They're starting to provide their mobile feeding units. So I would say the Red Cross is the first thing. And then also, don't visit right now, but come visit us probably early next year.
Right. Stay away for now. Good advice. He's Tom Ninestein, managing editor with our member station WUWF in Pensacola. Thanks, Tom.
My pleasure.
Now politics. Vote-by-mail ballots will begin to be sent out to Floridians in a couple of weeks. The Trump and Biden campaigns are spending millions of dollars targeting the most reliable type of voter, people over 60 years old. While there has been a big jump in voter turnout among youngest voters, 18 to 25-year-olds, senior citizens vote in higher concentrations. So let's hear from senior voters. Will you vote by mail or visit your polling place during early voting or wait until election day? What are the deciding factors to win your vote? 305-995-1800 across the state at 305-995-1800. If you're online, hold on with us. We'll get to your calls and your thoughts. We want to hear from you. In a few moments, we're also on Twitter at Florida Roundup. Joe Burns is with us now. Joe is with our member station WMFE. He is based in the Villages in Central Florida. Joe, welcome back to the Roundup. How are the presidential candidates targeting voters there in the Villages?
Well, you'll see ads focusing on the coronavirus. The Biden campaign featured a Villages resident in a recent ad, a TV ad. About her inability to get out and see her grandchildren and just the way that the Trump administration has handled COVID-19. For Republicans, they'll have ads focusing on crime and tax issues and other things that could drive Republican voters. That's the ad component. As for the ground game, of course, there isn't the kind of active ground game of that you might see when there's not a pandemic. But here in the Villages, we have the golf cart parade, and there have been some huge golf cart parades by the Republicans recently. They estimated 800 golf carts, and also by the Democrats. And they both have golf cart parades coming up. They do that to show support for their candidate, to show enthusiasm.
Joe, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the themes that the campaigns are using in their advertising and how those are resonating with voters in the Villages. Former Vice President Biden talking about health care and the pandemic, and it sounds like President Trump's campaign really talking about law and order and crime. I'm wondering about those traditional senior issues, though, Social Security, Medicare, and one that has crept up over the last really decade, 15 years or so, the cost of prescription medicine. Are those issues that the candidates, the campaigns are seizing upon, and if so, how?
I'm not seeing that a lot. I do know that those issues are important, and of course you see the president addressing issues of prescription drug costs and things like that. That will definitely be key for these voters. But I'm not seeing the campaigns focus particularly on those issues. What I'm seeing is a lot of back and forth and enthusiasm, and the way that the Republican Party here puts it is there's a lot of confidence in their vote, confidence in their man. And for the Democrats, what I'm hearing is they are fired up, and even though they can't get together to show that, apparently they feel extremely enthusiastic and energized for Biden and against Trump.
The Villages and the surrounding areas gave President Trump a big margin, really helping him carry the state of Florida in 2016. He won over Hillary Rodham Clinton by 115,000 votes in that tri-county area that make up the general Villages area. You mentioned the excitement about Democrats. How do Democrats hope to compete with that kind of margin? How do Republicans hope to keep it or even build upon it?
For the Democrats, mail-in ballots. They are just stressing that over and over again. This golf cart parade that they have coming up October 7th, the parade is actually going to go to the supervisor of elections office so that the participants can drop off their mail-in ballots. So that's their focus, mail-in ballots. For the Republicans, they are just confident. They're confident that they're going to. Their most recent parade, their theme was every vote counts. And while they're not stressing mail-in ballots, they're used to doing it, and they're used to voting early.
Joe Burns, reporter at WMFE, based in the Villages, talking about the senior vote, really concentrating there in that community, that broader community in the Tri-County area in Central Florida. Joe, stick with us as we continue talking about the senior vote here on the Roundup.
Well, he mentioned mail-in ballots, and voting by mail remains the most popular choice for voters around the state, senior voters, that is, according to a new AARP Florida Politics poll. Now, the numbers show Florida voters across all demographics are deeply committed to the long-term solvency of Social Security. Four out of five Florida voters surveyed say that the stability of Social Security is more important to them than cutting payroll taxes for businesses and workers. President Trump has ordered payroll taxes to be deferred until the end of the year. Jeff Johnson is the director of AARP Florida. He's on the line. Hi, Jeff.
Hey there. Great to be on. Thanks for talking about this.
Good to have you. Tell us a little bit more about what Florida's seniors are expressing when it comes to voting by mail.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things that have been a little bit surprising for us. And one of them is not surprising that with the coronavirus epidemic, you are seeing more older voters wanting to vote by mail. That historically in Florida, generally older voters are more likely to use mail-in voting as an option, but that seems to have accelerated because of the potential risks of exposure to the pandemic. What's a little unusual, from a Florida perspective, is that it is Democrats far more than Republicans, as your Villages reporter stated, who are focusing on that mail-in voting option. So that's a change from a state that historically has seen both parties, but frankly, especially Republicans, turn out the vote through mail.
Right. And certainly the pandemic is driving those concerns. When you look at the polling, more Democrats than Republicans are concerned about the coronavirus pandemic. But that shifts somewhat when you get into the over 60 population. You know, let's talk about how the pandemic is affecting the senior vote in Florida. Typically, the majority of seniors in this state have supported President Trump. How do you see the pandemic potentially affecting that base of support? What are your community saying to you about this?
So I think it's probably good for us to always remember that the 50 plus population and the 65 plus population in Florida is a diverse one, and that when we're talking about support for a particular political party, we're talking about margins. While historically we have seen older voters trend towards President Trump and previous Republican candidates, it's still a matter of margins. What has been most surprising to us is a recent poll that AARP commissioned in Florida and in a number of other battleground states showed that in Florida, voters 65 and over are actually trending towards candidate Biden, 49-48, which is clearly within the margin of error. It's clearly a toss-up. But that's a change from what people think of when we think about
this population. And how much is concern about the long-term solvency of Social Security impacting that senior vote?
As we've surveyed in a couple of different places, I think the coronavirus clearly is a lead issue. And I also think Social Security solvency is one as well. We were surprised, and you cited the poll that we did with Florida Politics. We were surprised not that people were more focused on Social Security solvency than the payroll tax cut, but that when we presented all of the different options for addressing the economic unrest that's come with COVID, whether it's, you know, the moratorium on evictions or stimulus payments or all of the unemployment expansion, Social Security dwarfed all of those, not only among older voters, but among younger voters as well. This is an issue that I think has much broader relevance than a lot of campaigns think about.
Jeff Johnson with AARP Florida, stick with us. We've got Joe Burns, reporter at WMFE in the Villages. Lots of folks want to add their voice to this conversation about the senior vote in Florida for the 2020 presidential campaign, particularly 305-995-1800 in St. Petersburg. Paul is on line five. Paul, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, listen, I just wanted to say that I'm voting for Trump, and it's because of how he handled the flights, how we stopped everybody coming in from China when the pandemic first started. I think if he hadn't done that, I think the country would be in a lot worse shape. And at that time, the Democrats were calling him a xenophobe. Nancy Pelosi was having parties out in Chinatown, telling people to come on down in San Francisco. And
so, Paul, it was that one action that got your vote in this case. Is that right?
The whole coronavirus thing. I mean, that's huge. Plus,
and you support the president's how the president has handled the virus.
Yes. Yeah. How he didn't cry. He didn't try to like get everybody up in alarm, panicking people. Try to keep the country calm.
Referring to the tape of the interviews with journalist Bob Woodward that have come out over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I did watch those, and I think he perhaps has an agenda, like a lot of people do.
That Bob Woodward has an agenda. That's what you're saying, Paul. We got it. I appreciate you calling in. How are you going to vote, by the way, Paul? Are you going to do vote by mail or go into a polling place?
I'm going to vote in person.
You vote in person. All right, there's Paul in St. Petersburg at 305-995-1800. Plant City, Stan has been holding on. Stan, thanks for calling in. You're on the radio.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I'm a 67-year-old and a lifelong Republican, and I am going to have to vote for Biden. And it's sort of my philosophy is sort of goes along with a Kenny Rogers song, "The Gambler." You got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And I just don't trust this president, because he's, he'll be somebody's best friend one day, and the next day he's stabbing him in the back. And so it has a lot more to do with just coronavirus. It has to do with integrity as a whole.
Yeah. Stan, I appreciate you adding your voice there from Plant City. Joe Burns, our reporter in the Villages. Are the parties targeting those registered faithful, or are they really going after those independent voters or voters like Stan that sound open to switching a vote that they cast in 2016 and voting a different party in 2020?
Well, they're definitely targeting the independent. So the way in Sumter County, which is where most of the Villages is, the votes, the registrations break down with almost 60% Republican, and then the rest are split between independents and Democrats. So the Democrats really want those independent voters. If you talk with the Democratic Party leaders there or club leaders, they're basically saying that they're getting a whole lot of people coming in and saying they're Republicans, want to vote for Biden, or that they're independents, or they want to register as Democrats. But what you're hearing from Republicans is they don't believe that. They're very confident that the traditional Republican vote is going to stay with President Trump.
It's interesting to hear the callers come in, guys, and you hear the partisan split in the sentiments being expressed by folks coming in on the lines. You know, if you're just tuning in here on the Florida Roundup, we're talking about the presidential election. Are you over 60 years old? Where do you stand politically? Who will get your vote on November 3rd? Or maybe you're going to vote early. Are you going to vote by mail? Are you concerned about the virus? And that's why you'll drop a ballot in the mail. Whatever's on your mind, we want to hear from you here on the Florida Roundup as we continue this conversation. The number to join us is 305-995-1800. And send your tweets to @FloridaRoundup. More of your calls and tweets right after the break, plus how the census count will affect Florida. That's next. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Little less than half of registered voters 2 years ago were senior citizens. They tend to be reliable voters, turning out in higher numbers than younger generations. And the Trump and Biden campaigns in this 2020 election cycle are going hard after older voters here in Florida. We want to hear from you. 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800 or @FloridaRoundup. Joe Burns is WMFE reporter based in the Villages in Central Florida. And Jeff Johnson is still with us, director of AARP Florida.
We're getting your tweets, too, @FloridaRoundup. People sounding off about where they stand On the presidential election, Sharon tweets the show, Trump is fighting to remove pre-existing condition protections. He has yet to show us his health care plan. And he said the COVID virus was a hoax that would disappear by Easter. For me, the choice is easy. Joe Biden, she says. But let us know, everybody, how you feel. 305-995-1800. Mary is holding. She's in Geneva, Florida. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a 62-year-old retired high school history teacher, and I've been an avid follower of politics my entire life, never missed a presidential election. I find Donald Trump to be, in my opinion, one of the worst presidents we've ever had in the history of the United States. I'm used to be a Republican, but I switched because I simply could not vote for the man. My 90-year-old father, who voted Republican on every single election, he too feels the same way. He's lied about everything from the beginning. He does what personally benefits him. And I think that the man's just awful. We're going to vote like we usually do by mail. But instead of dropping it in the mailbox, we're kind of concerned about the recent problems with the mail. We're going to be dropping it at the supervisor of elections office during early voting.
Mary, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. Jeff Johnson, AARP Florida. What are your thoughts about the feedback we're getting from some seniors out there, particularly ones that take pains to say that they're lifelong Republicans, but that they won't support this president? That softening senior support for President Trump in Florida on the margins, that could make a difference. And also, it's interesting to hear people saying how they plan to vote by mail. They're very concerned about getting their mail-in ballot early, even so far as wanting to drive it and drop it off personally. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Between the different polls that we've done, there is certainly an interest in voters wanting to vote by mail. And we saw a little bit of a drop off from polls we did earlier in the summer on that front. Some of that may be because the coronavirus has not been as high a degree of incidence now as it was earlier in the summer. Some of it may be the concerns that have been raised about the U.S. Postal Service. I do think that having drop-off boxes that supervisors of elections are monitoring may provide some of those folks with the opportunity to weigh in. It is interesting, though, as you point out, that we are hearing more people who are reconsidering historic voter alignments. And a lot of it seems to boil back to coronavirus response and healthcare and those bedrock programs. I will also note for the caller you had earlier who supported the president's response to the pandemic that we did find that in our survey too, that folks who are generally in favor of the president really respond well to the way he's responded to the pandemic, whether that is about specific actions he's taken to stop the disease or the push to reopen the economy and economic concerns trumping health concerns. Is a level of detail we didn't get to in the survey. So it's interesting to hear both sides of those comments from your listeners.
Regarding vote by mail, particularly in the villages, Joe Burns, what kind of preparations are underway? Are you hearing about on the part of county officials to deal with vote by mail and what's expected to be an increase, at least in demand for ballots, whether or not those ballots show back up on through the mail or through being turned in by hand, remains to be seen. But at least the demand, what kind of preparation is that area in the villages ready for?
I'm hearing confidence. I'm hearing that they don't think it's going to be a problem. And part of the reason is that, of course, in Florida, they can count those ballots ahead of time. As they come in, they'll process them. And you can go online, by the way, and check to see the status of your mail-in ballot, see if there was a problem with it. And you'll see if it was the last of those four items in that list, you know, requested, sent, received, and the last item is counted.
Yep.
So people can check and they can see this. But There's no worry, basically, from the supervisor of elections.
Expressing confidence in being able to handle the anticipated volume. Alice is giving us a holler from Miami. Alice, thanks for calling. You're on the radio now.
Oh, Shirley. Okay, I was asked to say how I will be voting. I do plan to early vote like we normally do. But I also requested, I am requesting a ballot just for backup. There's one problem that I have found, though, with my request. The envelope that they sent to return my request to a ballot is too short, so it does not accommodate my request.
So the ballot envelope, the return envelope that was sent to you, that you've already received this ballot?
No, not yet. This is my request. This is my request.
Right. And you're making your request. Ballot. You're making your request through the U.S. Post Office, too.
Correct.
I see.
But the envelope is too short. It does not accommodate my ballot request.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why they did that. So I'm thinking of going to the elections office.
Yeah, and Alice, if you have some internet access or know someone who does, you can also request that ballot online too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're pretty set. We vote every election. That's not a problem with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alice, I appreciate you calling in. Thanks.
You know, Tom, that's why it's so fascinating to get these calls, because as we know, voters over 60 are super voters. They will turn out and they will vote in every election, and they are so engaged. Jeff Johnson, I know you know this too. They are following this so closely and are wired into these issues more than ever before.
I think campaigns are aware of, but that sometimes we lose sight of. So it's a little less than half of Florida voters are in that older voter category, but the older voters do provide two-thirds in some elections the votes in midterms, and then in election years it's about 60% of the vote that are older voters. So you would think that as the campaigns are out there, the messages that we're hearing in the villages, but also the opportunities to talk about Social Security, Medicare, high cost of prescription drugs, these are issues on which both candidates have stories to tell. President Trump, certainly from his time in the last 4 years in office, Vice President Biden from his long career in Washington, can talk to those issues. And it's a little surprising that we're not hearing more about that.
It's really fascinating to hear from callers across the state and also get your thoughts from the villages, Joe, the Sumter County area, where so many senior voters could play a decisive role in this election. So I want to thank you both. Joe Burns, reporter for WMFE based in the villages, and Jeff Johnson, he's director of AARP Florida. Guys, thank you both for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, as the election nears, another deadline looms with enormous consequences. It's the once-a-decade population count nationwide, the census. It's scheduled to end at the end of this month, unless a federal court requires it to continue through October. Billions of dollars, political boundaries, seats in Congress, all up for grabs with this count. So have you filled out that census form yet? Have you done it online? Did you do a paper form? Is it maybe waiting on your dining room or kitchen table? What questions do you have about the census, how it works, and how it's used? 305-995-1800, talking about the once-a-decade count of Florida and the rest of the nation at 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup.
Mike Schneider of the Associated Press has been looking into the latest on the census, and he joins us now. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. It's great to have your insights on the show this Friday. So what do we know so far about the response rate to this census so far here in Florida?
Well, Florida isn't doing so well compared to other states. It ranks about 10th from the bottom of the 50 states, and it's behind the national average. Right now, just shy of about 90% of all Florida households have been reached so far, while the national average is over 93%.
So not doing so well, and that's not good news for Florida, because the more people respond to the census, the better it is for all of us. Can you explain why it's so important that we answer the census?
Sure. As was said just before I came on, billions of dollars are at stake for Florida, but also political representation. Projections have Florida gaining anywhere from 1 to 2 congressional seats based on the growth in population over the past 10 years. And if that growth isn't properly counted during the census, that instead of getting two seats, Florida might just get one extra congressional seat. And it's almost like leaving money on the table. A lot of people in Florida are really concerned about that.
Sure. So what's happening then to try to juice those numbers in Florida, reach out to more people to make sure that their name is listed and that they're counted?
Right. So right now the census is in a phase that probably most people associated with the census. It's the door knocking phase when you'll see census takers with their census bag knocking on the doors of homes that haven't yet responded. So this is currently scheduled for now to continue through the end of September. Meanwhile, people still have the opportunity to respond on their own, and they can respond either online by mailing back a paper form or else by doing it over the telephone. And so where Florida's kind of fallen down compared to the rest of the state, the rest of the 50 states, is really in the self-response rate. It was below the national average, and it was also towards the bottom of the other states. But, there's still 12 days left until the census ends, at least for now, because I think it was mentioned before, the deadline is currently being litigated in the courts, and a federal judge could rule one way or another next week as to whether the census is going to end in September, as is now planned, or whether it will be extended by an extra month and end at the end of October.
Can you explain a little bit more about that? By the way, this is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Can you explain a little bit more about what prompted this court challenge and why this is so significant?
Sure. So, like most things in 2020, the pandemic played a role. Originally, the census was going to end at the end of July. Then the pandemic came and hit across the U.S., really right when the census was starting for most people in the U.S. And so the Census Bureau came up with a pandemic plan, and that plan called for the census to end at the end of October. And instead of the door knockers heading out in May, they would head out at the beginning of August. So that was basically the plan until about July, and it was also contingent on Congress passing an extension of the deadlines that the Census Bureau has for turning in its data. It needs to turn in data used for deciding how many congressional seats each state gets. That deadline is December 31st. And so the Census Bureau needed Congress to pass an extension of that deadline. It passed the Democratic-controlled House, but the Republican-controlled Senate failed to act on it. So the Census Bureau decided in July that without this deadline extension, we need to turn in these numbers by the end of December. So we're going to have to move up the end of the headcount from the end of October to the end of September. However, a group of civil rights groups, cities and counties, sued the Census Bureau saying, no, you know, this count should not, we should not shorten it by a month. We should, let it end in October. Otherwise, we're going to miss minority communities, which are typically the hardest to count and the hardest to reach. And so that currently is being litigated right now.
Being litigated in a federal court district in California. We're talking about the census count, which right now is scheduled to end in a little bit more than a week at the end of September, 305-995-1800. Have you filled out that census form? Did you do it by paper? Did you do it online this year? Is the first time you could be counted on the internet by doing that on the web? 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup. Gay in Altamont is along with us now. Gay, welcome to the program. You've got some experience with the Census Bureau, eh?
Yes. I worked for the Census 30 years ago, and it was a lot of fun. You get hired on as a temporary, and you work a piece of it, and if they like you, they keep you for each next section of it. And each section builds on the one previous. So beginning in the beginning,
we just go to different addresses and confirm that there's a house there or if there's an extra apartment or just to confirm all the addresses. Mm-hmm. And then in a next phase, they would check, say, did you send in your census, and then they keep fine-tuning it to the point where they get that last little bit of information, who did not send back. They go back out in the field and try to get, those last few in. And then also, like, circus workers and, people that are transients, and mm-hmm. they try to get all of those in. And just very, very interesting work. And then they have, like, clear overlays where they show where the borders have changed, say a town incorporated a little bit more land or whatever. Then they have to make sure they're getting the exact right amount of homes and then what addresses go with that into that new incorporation to change the numbers in their overall census taking. Really fabulous work. I sent mine in the first day I got it.
Is that you did it by paper instead of by internet, though?
Yeah, because it came in the mail, so I sent it in by paper.
Gay, thanks for sharing your experiences. That was the 1990 census, if my math is right. Is that true?
30 years ago, yeah, it was.
Yeah, there you go. Time flies. Indeed, it does. Thanks, Gay, sharing your story from Altamont. Talking about the census, the once-in-a-decade count of all of America. It is underway now. Florida's response rate is less than the national response rate. And in some places in Florida, it is less than two-thirds of those have kind of raised their hands so far, and less than just a couple of weeks left. 305-995-1800 to talk about the census and what's at stake for Florida. Mike Schneider with the Associated Press, stick with us. More of your phone calls, 305-995-1800. And still to come a little bit later on in the program, a look at the reopening of Florida's bars with strict new rules. You're listening to the Florida Roundup. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we continue our conversation with Mike Schneider of the Associated Press, what are your questions about the census? Florida hasn't had the best response rate, and that could mean lots of money leaving on the table for healthcare spending in the state. We could even not pick up a seat in Congress that's due us. What do you think about all this? Paul is on the line in Boca Raton. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi. I've had my experience with the census, at least this year, was that I was able to fill out online, and that made it very simple. Also, earlier in the year, I was offered a position with the Census Bureau as an enumerator, which is the first the people that go knocking on doors after, they don't, the mail-in responses aren't sent in. But however, between the time I made the application and was offered the position, the census was delayed. And then when they did, I think it was in August maybe, they called me and they asked me if I was ready. And I said, absolutely not, that I'm not comfortable. I would not be comfortable knocking on people's doors at this time. So it's unfortunate. I'm sure that there were many people like me possibly that had to turn the position down, which probably led, in fact, they called me several times, like, are you sure? Do you want to come tomorrow? Or, and I just had to keep saying no to them.
Yeah, I understand, Paul. And that's really illuminating to hear your story there. So, Mike Schneider, Associated Press, how has that impacted the ability of the census to get an accurate count? The coronavirus is making some people hesitant to do this work.
Right. That has been a real problem for the 2020 census. In fact, I think around a third of the census takers who had committed to being census takers ultimately decided, they'd go through training and then not show up. And the Census Bureau believes that is primarily because of concerns over the pandemic. But the Bureau has distributed face masks and hand sanitizer to workers and instructed them to keep, 6 feet apart when they interview the household. But still, it raised a lot of concerns for people who otherwise would have been census takers.
even before COVID, there was plenty of controversy around the census, Mike. As you remember, last summer, the Trump administration was fighting to include a question about citizenship on the census. The Supreme Court stepped in and blocked the question. As you've talked to census professionals, as you've talked to advocacy groups, has that cast a shadow, do they think, at all over the questionnaire for some, particularly in Florida?
Well, that issue ultimately was rejected by the Supreme Court.
Right.
Said, we told the Trump administration you couldn't put it on. But the citizenship question is a question that keeps resurfacing because in July, President Trump issued another order, and this time the order would have limited or would have excluded people in the country illegally from being counted in the numbers that are used to allocate the number of congressional seats for each state. There was a lawsuit against that by civil rights groups and the state of New York and other states. And they argued that, not only is it illegal and unconstitutional, but it's going to keep people from participating in the ongoing census that is going on right now. Last week, a panel of federal judges in New York ruled that the order was unlawful. And the Trump administration just said this week that it plans to appeal to the Supreme Court.
In the brief amount of time we have left, Mike, let's explain that this is the first year you could fill out the census online. That's what we did at our house. That does make it at least easier for some people who might not want to mail it in on paper.
Right. And that has been really successful. The Census Bureau estimates that about 80% of people who did self-respond did so online. And no one predicted a pandemic, but in many ways, the ability to respond online has been very helpful during these unusual circumstances.
Mike, you mentioned the response rate in Florida. We mentioned perhaps two congressional seats could be up for Florida because of the population growth. And of course, those boundaries would be decided because of the census, right?
Exactly. The numbers, not necessarily the boundaries, that would be done by the legislature, but the actual numbers on how many congressional seats each state gets would be based on the census.
And then that would just continue to raise Florida's profile when it comes to presidential election years, correct?
Exactly.
Right.
We get more electoral votes.
That's right.
Electoral college votes. So.
We're getting tweets about this, too,
yeah.
Of people saying they signed up to be a poll worker and a census worker, but they pulled out. The COVID risk was just too great. The pandemic is just affecting every aspect of our lives, as you said, Mike, including this, the census.
Right. And also, the Census Bureau has another thing to contend with in the closing weeks, and that's disasters with the wildfires in California and the hurricanes in the Gulf Coast. That's also having an impact.
Mike, have you filled out your census for your household yet?
I did it first thing. I got it when I got it back in March. I was very excited.
You're modeling good behavior then, Mike. Good for you. And Melissa, I'm right there with you. We did it online as well. It was one of those lockdown activities that we did in the early days of the pandemic to try to occupy our time. The deadline coming approaching fast. Mike Snyder covering the census for the Associated Press. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Well, this week bars reopened across much of Florida, but only at 50% capacity. Still, it's the first time in months many of you can get a drink, hang out at a bar, without having to also order food. It's another step of reopening, though again, the bars can only be half full under state rules, and bars in most of South Florida do remain closed. I learned more from Halsey Bashirs. He's Secretary of the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. Secretary Bashirs, thanks for being with us. As we talk about the reopening of bars around the state, you think that bar and craft brewery owners will do a better job this time of following the new rules. Why is that?
After traveling and doing the roundtables that we did across the state and listening to the hundreds and talking with hundreds of bar and brewery owners, I heard their stories of the struggle and observed you know, their serious commitment to making health and safety a continuing priority in their businesses moving forward. They realize they have to get it right this time because the economic consequences of another shutdown are just beyond disastrous. They can't stand another one.
And you have said that you will shut establishments down, that you'll more aggressively crack down on bars that are not following the 50% occupancy rules. How is that going to be executed?
The way we've been doing it here in the past is we are just looking for those egregious, blatant offenses. Those people that are, they're packing them in and they have ignored the emergency orders that the governor or this agency has, that we've sent out. Right now, we have changed our shifts from 4 p.m. to 12 a.m. We're going to actively patrol those places where we know that are going to be busy. And then if we observe them in that capacity where they're not doing seated service, people are standing around, and it's really overcrowded. It's obvious it's over 50% occupancy. We're going to suspend their license, and we're going to bring them into an administrative hearing and either fine them or take their license.
How much of that has already been done?
I cannot talk about existing or cases that are currently happening right now. There have been multiple, I will tell you. Some we've settled, some we're still working through.
Okay. Obviously, business owners have been vocal about wanting to be able to reopen their doors and get back to making money again. That said, epidemiologists have warned that even opening bars at 50% will spread COVID-19. And that's even if everybody follows the safety restrictions. What's your response to those who are concerned that this could lead to a further spike in cases of coronavirus?
This virus is spreading. There's only so much you can do to slow down Mother Nature. What I would say is for those that are really concerned, then if they're uncomfortable being in the public or they have a health concern, then they need to stay home. And consequently, the other side of that is those patrons that need that socialization, they want to be out in the public, just be respectful of other people and give them some space. I think if we do that, then we can continue to move forward in a safe way, and I think we can find a way through this.
And what are the biggest challenges of executing this? I mean, this is a state with a lot of night spots. A lot people come here to party and have a good time. What's the toughest part about all of this for your agency? Because this is an unprecedented challenge, I would think, for you and your team.
Yes, ma'am, it absolutely is. Look, there's no playbook on this thing. There's nothing that's happened in the past. You know, we're writing the playbook as we go. So we try and tell our agents they're out there, they're using some common sense. They're looking at the places that are egregious, like I said, in nature. And you know, the hardest part is just getting other people to tell us where the hot spots are, the overcrowded places are. That's what we found is the toughest. Because I've learned that 95% of people out there, they want to do the right thing. They want to keep everyone safe. They want to be able to operate. They want to be able to open their business. And, you know, the people that work in them, they want to keep people safe, too. So and the patrons that are out, they want to do the right thing. You're going to have a few bad apples that ruin it for everyone. So the hardest part is getting other people to say, hey, man, help us with those bad apples so they don't ruin it for everyone.
How many people do you have out there deployed doing this kind of work?
You know, our ABT division is the biggest division at DBPR, so I'm not going to comment exactly on how many agents we have, but we're covering the state, that I can tell you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Halsey Bashirs, he heads up the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, their secretary overseeing bar and craft brewery owners and regulating businesses throughout Florida. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity. Have a great day.
That is our show, The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are the producers.
Jason Zapka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming. Peter Meritz is our Technical Director. Peter's also the Director of Radio Operations. We get engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Leslie Ovaya answered the phones. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at AaronLibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next Friday at noon.